Hey everybody, welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat reporter for the Mercury News, and I'm joined today by Warriors legend Rick Barry, who came on for a wide-ranging conversation about his career, why the LeBron vs. MJ debate isn't worth having, how he would have played in today's NBA, fly fishing, why Bill Simmons owes him an apology, and the curse of being a perfectionist. Like I said, wide-ranging. Few people are more candid than Rick Barry, and to be honest, I had way more fun with this conversation than I thought I would because he was so willing to steer it into the places that he wanted to talk about. This is a good one, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You went to the University of Miami in the 60s. How did you like living in South Florida for a few years? Because I'm from South Florida originally.
I loved it as long as I didn't have to be there in the summer. It's just like now. I'm in Florida right now, but I sure as hell I'm not going to be here in the summertime. Yeah, now, this is the time of the year to be down here. I love it down here. This, you know, winters are great. I've had the fortune of doing it. Once my son Canyon was done with his college stuff, my wife and I spent the winters. I had the luxury of doing that, which I couldn't do with my other boys, which is I wish I could have, because I just love watching my boys play. And we got to watch him play 3 years at Charleston and then his last year at Florida. And so my wife's family's from Florida. They live in St. Pete Beach, and so she wanted to be reasonably close to them. You know, they're in their 80s, and so we're about 40 minutes away from them, and then I had to be near airport, so I'm only an hour from Tampa and like 35-40 minutes from Sarasota Brayden Airport, so it's perfect.
I'm going to dramatically change topics here, but you've lost an NBA Finals. You've won an NBA Finals. You know,
don't remind me about that loss. Why are you doing that? It haunts me to this day.
I could have.
Role plays. My God, it was two pick and roll plays with Nate Thurman, my dear departed friend and teammate, and Will Chamberlain. And if those plays went our way instead of their ways, we would have won in six freaking games. That was like, it haunts me to this day.
You didn't. I mentioned the finals that you won. You didn't care about that one. You only care about the one you lost.
No, man, that's the ones, man. It's, you remember the bad things more than you do the good things. It's, when you're a perfectionist, those are the things that drive you nuts.
Well, I think that anybody knows how hard it is if it comes down to two pick and roll plays. So when you hear things like the Lakers should have an asterisk, or
that's bullshit.
Go back further. Yeah,
an asterisk only to explain what happened. That's all. I mean, not to take anything away from what they accomplished. It's just an asterisk to explain that it was a COVID situation. So you explain what happened, but it doesn't diminish what they accomplished.
So I agree with that. There should probably be some sort of footnote. And if you need to get attention to that footnote with an asterisk, I suppose that's okay. But you even look to when Toronto beat the Warriors last year. Look, injuries are always part of it, and I guess the difference between playing in a bubble and versus playing a team that's injured is that the bubble is novel, right? Like, that's something that never happens. While injuries, you know, probably affect every season in some way, shape, or form, but I think the asterisk does have a negative connotation, like you're talking about, that it shouldn't have that. And I even think that people think that the Warriors should have asterisks because they had, you know, the cap spike led to them getting Kevin Durant, putting together this super team.
No. The asterisk for the other one is because it was a pandemic. I mean, it was an unusual circumstance, and all it's there for is to let you know that it was a shortened season because of the pandemic. That's all. That's all that needs to be done. I mean, there's nothing else. It takes nothing away from what they accomplished. I mean, hell, you start getting into that stuff with records and stuff and all. Hell, I have some stuff in doing it that I'd still have the record. I mean, somebody beat me in a record or something only because of the fact that one of the games they played in was an overtime game. If it wasn't for that, I would have the record.
They should probably have different records for things set in regulation versus things set in overtime.
Well, what they need to do is they need to have different records for the freaking All-Star game, because it's not even a game anymore. Just call it the All-Star exhibition and take away all the bullshit that they have. I mean, that's a joke, those things. I mean, so there you go. I mean, you know, so you can have all kinds of issues when it comes to records.
Are you interested at all in the LeBron versus Michael Jordan debate?
There is no debate.
There is no debate.
What's the debate? The debate's because people always want to go and say who was the best. One's a two, one's a three. Both of them could play the two, and both of them could probably handle the ball and play the one, but one was a two and one was a three. LeBron is the greatest three to play the game so far, and Michael was the greatest two to play the game. Fair, end of it. No, end of the story. No debate.
So the answer is no, you're not interested in the debate.
No, but there is no debate to me, because why do people want to pick the best? You can't. But then, okay, so are you going to tell me LeBron is better than Will Chamberlain? In team sports, you can only have the best player at each position. And then you can debate about who's best at that position. That's something that you can have a discussion about.
So let's do
but
that.
But not about who's the best when they play different positions. So you're going to tell me, okay, who is better, Sandy Koufax or Willie Mays?
I couldn't tell you.
Well, of course you can't tell me. One's a pitcher and one's a center fielder.
That's right. So let's do that debate, not the Sandy Koufax debate, but the best five. The best. So we've already got our best two and our best three. The best point guard then would be
the best point guard.
Yeah,
that's a great debate that you can have. I mean, because of his versatility, I would say the majority of people would probably pick Magic Johnson.
I think that's fair. And then the best,
even though there's a lot of other guys that I'd be more than happy to play with. You know,
what do you do with somebody like Tim Duncan? Because people say he's the greatest power forward of all time, but he played so much center toward the end of his career.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that the four and the five really are interchangeable. I mean, and the one, twos, and threes are interchangeable if you're playing the game the right way. I mean, now it's like the one, two, three, fours are interchangeable. I mean, sometimes it's the one, two, three, four, and fives because everybody's playing out in the freaking perimeter. You know, the game has changed so much. But, you know, I mean, certainly Duncan is up there as one of the, you know, one of the greatest power forwards, you know, in the game. And he'd be in the mix. And then some people would throw in, you know, Karl Malone, then you'd throw in Bob Pettit, and you could throw in a number of other people who play there. I mean, hell, it's interesting. I mean, if you're playing the game, I mean, wouldn't you like to have somebody? For me, if I was playing a team and I had to pick a team, I'd take Bill Russell to play four for me. I don't care that he can't shoot from outside and stuff, but I don't need him to shoot. Hell, I got enough other guys that could score, and I want a few shots myself if I'm picking a team. I want them blocking shots and rebounding and having an impact on the outcome of the game. Who the hell cares if he can score?
You talk about versatility. You were one of the first point forwards. In today's
game. I'm not
game,
one of them. I was the first.
You were the first. That's absolutely right. My bad. So you lost the finals, and you were one of the first point forwards. Those are my two screw-ups so far.
No, that's okay. It's no problem.
It was I think when we look at guys, I'm doing a lot of draft prep right now, and I keep seeing stuff like, well, you know, he played point guard in high school, and then he had a growth spurt as a junior, and then he played power forward and center at Kentucky or whatever it was. Did that happen with you? I was trying to find any information on this online. Did you have because you were very adept at the ball handling and passing, but you were the first point forward. Did that kind of late growth spurt happen to you?
Forgive me if I start laughing at everything. I get such a kick out of people say I was adept at ball handling. I could dribble righty, lefty, and I could do a crossover dribble, and I was fast and down the court, and I would bring it up the court after a rebound. My ball handling skills, if there's one area of the game when people say, yeah, you guys couldn't play today, and I laugh at that all the time because they say, what are you out of your mind? I'd be so much better if I was playing today with the technology they have and the training that they have. It'd be a joke. I'd be faster, stronger, quicker, jump higher, more endurance. I'd be so much better basketball player. The one area that I would have to be better in, ball handling. Because the way the guys could do things now, back when I played, especially when I was younger, if I did some of the stuff the guys are doing now, the coach would put you on the bench. He wouldn't let you do all that stuff. Now, you know, you can overdo it and you have to be efficient when you're doing it. But no, I would do that. I watched my youngest son, Canyon, and I see the ball handling stuff that he's doing. And I saw my son, Scooter, initially, because he learned a lot of stuff from Pete Maravich. But being able to do that does give you an advantage if used judiciously and properly. And that's the one area of the game only that I would need to improve on, I think, in order to be able to compete in the game the way it's played today.
But you were better than a lot of people at your position at doing that, or at least you had
ball skills. For somebody my size. Yeah, somebody my size doing that. There weren't a lot of guys that would bring it up the floor and could do that and pass it and see the floor. But it pales in comparison to what kids. I watch my youngest son, Canyon, and the stuff he does in the two ball drills and watch some of the things he does when he plays. And I just say, wow, I wish if I could have done that, I mean, I would have really kicked people's butt.
I'll be right back with Rick Barry, but first let's talk about Built Bar. If you're like me, when you get hungry, you can make bad decisions. But the best way to avoid blowing your diet is to be prepared. That's why I always have a box of Built Bars in the kitchen. Not only is this the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, it's the most healthy and it fills me up while I'm busy or I'm on the go. They have 18 amazing flavors all the time, and they have limited time flavors like maple pecan and pumpkin chocolate chip cookie available now. Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, they taste like a candy bar, but they're low calorie, they're low sugar, while also being high in protein and fiber, so they're perfect for keto and other low carb diets. I am getting back on my low carb diet fix. I'm going to do that between now and Thanksgiving so that I could feel good about going all out on Thanksgiving. I had a Built Bar this afternoon. It's a perfect snack when you're trying to stay low sugar and low carb and all of those things. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off of your next order plus a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. What's something you wish you had had? Like, you mentioned the technology and all the stuff they have. Is there something there specifically that you're like, man, if I had that, I could have played another 5 years in my prime or something?
Well, I probably wouldn't have gotten hurt and had my knee operations because I would have developed the muscles in my leg because the time I got hurt, I was up in the air. And and the doctor said I had no strength in the exterior of my leg. I mean, there's different exercises that you can do to make yourself as strong as possible. If I had those, I probably would have never gotten that first injury. So yeah, that would be the one thing I would want to have. If there was another thing that I said I'd like to be able to have, it would be have the ability to go and the techniques they have and the training they have to increase my jumping, because I didn't have the luxury. And the other thing is to try to lengthen my hands. I didn't have big hands, so I couldn't hold the ball with one. I couldn't palm the ball. That's an advantage to take that ball and move it around. Wow, what an advantage that is. But that would be down the list. The other one is the jumping, because I felt confident that I'm going to be able to get. Well, here's the thing. People say I'm going to, you know, be able to beat a guy. Well, I don't have to beat a guy. I just need to get you on my shoulder. Mm. I don't have to go by you. If I get you on my shoulder, you're done. That's all. It's a half a step. And so, but the thing is I know I could get half a step and get the chance to go past my defender. But then I had to trick the second guy who came over to help. So if you have that great jumping, you jump over the second guy. not necessarily literally over his head and stuff, but you jump up over him and you can go up and dunk the ball, especially if you have one hand that you can palm it. So, you know, that's an incredible luxury to have. I didn't have that.
Right. And so, you know, at the risk of my third strike here with you, you did have a reputation.
I'm not counting. Don't worry about it.
For being, this would be third, depending on where this question goes. You had a reputation for being tough, for being a jerk on the court. Is that something that,
That's bullshit. Okay, so we'll bring that up. That's not a strike at all. That's just you reading some idiot writers who wrote stuff about things that portrayed me, I think, as something other than what I was. Was I a demanding teammate? Hell yes. Was Michael Jordan way more demanding than I ever was? I mean, and Jerry West used to say to do things, but I was like the poster child for that stuff. I mean, because I was very expressive. You could see how I felt. And I was a perfectionist, and I wasn't going to allow things to be done by the officials or anybody else that I felt was an injustice. And so I did that. But I don't think that my teammates would say that as a person, not a bad person. And why judge me as a person based upon the way I conducted myself in an unreal environment? Playing basketball and being involved in a competitive sport is not the real world. That's not who you are as a person. That's who you are as a competitor. And as a competitor, I didn't go out there to make friends with you. I got there to kick your ass, okay? And I'm going to do that as well and as much as I can. And it's one of the reasons why I was an MVP in the year we won the championship. I had an unbelievable season. It didn't even finish second. Why? Because for the first time, they let the players choose. Oh, yeah, that's really smart. Like, they're not going to let their personal feelings come into it, right?
Right.
So I lost that. I mean, I was the only unanimous pick for the first team All-Pro that year. I think that's a pretty good indication that had the writers been choosing the MVP, that I would have won the MVP.
So then, I mean, you mentioned it's not who you were in the real world. Who is Rick Barry in the real world?
Somebody you'd like to have as a friend. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's loyal. Somebody who's a good person. Yeah, simple. Ask my friends. You know, I had people read. Bill Simmons called me a dick in his book. And Bill Simmons has never even freaking really met me or spent any time with me, and he called me a dick. I mean, come on. Where's your professionalism on that story? When he sees me, he needs to apologize. I've never met him. When I did, I'm going to ask him. I said, you want to apologize to me now?
I'm going to change topics here then. Where does Rick Barry like to go on vacation?
Fishing.
Okay.
That's my new passion. You have to have a passion in life.
That's right.
So I had to find something to have a passion once I couldn't play basketball. So I still love basketball. People say, do you miss the game? I say no. And they look weirdly at me. And I said, yeah. I said, but the reason I don't miss it is I never think about it. Why would I want to think about the fact that I can never do what I love to do so much?
Is it competitive, the fishing? I mean, what do you like
no,
about
it? No, it's just a passion, something you really love to do. I make it competitive myself because I go out and I get numbers and I try to hook 100 fish a day when I go to Alaska. So I challenge myself, but it's just so much fun. Every strike is like an adrenaline rush for me. So it's just a very invigorating thing to do. And it's a skill. Fly fishing is what I mainly do. Fly fishing is a skill.
Right.
And I'm getting better at it. I'm certainly by no means an expert. And I always try to learn and have my guides point things out to me that I could help to improve on. And I absolutely love it. I love being out in nature and being away from the craziness that goes on in this world. And I get to do it with my dear friend, like a brother, Clifford Ray. We get to do a lot of that. And And I go with some other people and I put trips together for businesses or other people. And I love doing it. I mean, I'll do bass fishing with spin and bait casting stuff, but I prefer fly fishing because of the skill of it. And it's just a different thing. If you fish, catching a fish on a fly rod is just so much more exhilarating and fun than catching it on a spinning rod or a fly rod or on a bait casting rod.
So I'm starting to pick something up, and you mentioned the skill
and
that's
pickleball.
Involved.
Sorry, I have pickleball too. Now that's the challenge. I did pickleball. I've played in one tournament actually. I had to play out of my age division. I can't find somebody. I'm dying to find somebody my age that I can team up with in men's doubles and mixed doubles, but it's not easy when you get to be old. And I played in the 50 and above with my buddy Jeff Johnson down here, who I play pickleball with, and we won the tournament. So that was really cool last year.
I'm not entirely sure even what pickleball is.
Oh, pickleball is the greatest. It's just like one of the fastest growing sports in the country. It's kind of a miniature thing, sort of like tennis. You play with paddles, not rackets, and it's awesome. I just played last night actually with my son and a couple of my friends, with Jeff actually and another guy, and I would play every day if I could.
So you like the skill development part of this. You like the skill development of pickleball, of fishing. You mentioned being a perfectionist. That, I think there's two different kinds of competitiveness. There's the competitiveness of I want to win and I don't want to lose. And then there's the competitiveness of basically being a perfectionist and just competing with yourself to hone and work on a skill, even if you might not ever be perfect at that skill. I feel like
you're never in that latter camp. You'll never be perfect. I mean, I realize that, but you always strive to do it. But no, I'm both.
Sure.
I hate losing. Even when I play pickleball, my wife says, well, go out social. I said, hey, if I want social, I can go out and go someplace and sit down and talk to somebody. Going out and playing pickleball is not something I want to be social about. I want to compete. I want to win. I mean, I still love that. Same thing with long driving. I did long driving in golf. That was kind of fun. I did that for a while until they killed the older guys' division. The old farts got rid of us. I won 4 world long driving championships in golf.
I suppose I shouldn't. I said two different categories, but maybe two different tiers. There's the first tier of just being a competitor, who people who want to win don't want to lose. And then there's that second tier of people who don't want to win but don't want to lose. But also it's just that love of the craft, of being in the gym, of working on at the driving range until you're able to win world championships with long drives and doing those things. And it still feels like you have those things when you look at today's NBA, just to sort of bring it back here. Who are some of the guys that you look at that may also share that level of competitiveness? I think one of the guys that people talk about all the time are like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and all these people.
Yeah, well, Kobe sure was that way. And yeah. Michael, same way. I remember when I was broadcasting, I said, Well, the thing is, Michael, but he's not a great, not that great a mid-range shooter. And then he became really good at doing that. And then I said, well, he's not that great at the three. Well, he all of a sudden became really good at the three. And I mean, that's still LeBron's thing. And LeBron has never really gotten to the point. I kind of called it God's equalizer, is that if God forbid, if he was ever a great shooter and had great shooting form, I made big stink about it. In fact, they never get credit for it, but I made a big deal about his shooting form. And if you go look at the film of him this first few years in the league, his elbow was so far out, and he was a horrible shooter. And he improved that dramatically. But he's never gotten to the point. I don't think he's ever shot 80% from the free throw line. So he's never been a great shooter. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, thank God that's the case. Because when I drove, I wanted to get fouled. Mm-hmm. I was hoping I got fouled because I knew I was going to make some of the baskets anyway. Now I got a chance for 3 points. I don't really think LeBron wants to get fouled when he drives to the basket. And I think there was a stat out something that he's missed has some of the most misses late in basketball games at the free throw line. I mean, I think I read that somewhere about it, that he has a lot of misses at the free throw line late in games. And that's, you know, so thank God for that, because otherwise it'd be a joke what he's able to do. It's pretty phenomenal what he's accomplished. He's an amazing player.
Right. And would he be one of the players that you enjoy watching the most right now?
Yeah, I enjoy watching LeBron play, but not when he totally dominates. Like, I think against the Warriors, I was doing writing for the San Francisco Examiner, and mm-hmm. after the first game, I said there is no way Cleveland Cavaliers can beat the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Too much one-on-one stuff. I remember one game, I think it was 49 possessions. There was either zero or one pass. How's that for playing?
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's not the way you play the game. Can't win that way.
So you like the ball movement stuff and things like that.
I like basketball played the way it is in its pure, truest form, not old school. That's the way the game was designed to be played. I hate the way some of the teams play right now, but a lot of them have picked up on the success with the Warriors, and a lot of teams will pass the ball around and do a little bit more, but it's just usually like passing. There's not a lot of stuff where they're running people off of, you know, two and three guys to try to, you know, eliminate the other person. The big thing I was taught, the more decisions you force the defense to make, the more the likelihood they're going to make a mistake. And if you have really intelligent players who understand how to play the game, you're going to capitalize on those mistakes. And the initial guy that you're trying to get open for a shot may not be the play that you get. And the two things that pop into mind were the Warriors when they almost swept Cleveland in that one series, they were up 3-0. You give Cleveland credit for, you know, playing a heck of a game to make it go back to Golden State for game 5. And then they had a big lead and the Warriors came back on them. Well, they could have folded 10. Well, they didn't. And the game was still really close in the third quarter, but there were two plays that turned the whole game around. And I think it was either Clay or Steph coming off, running from the left side, running off of some potential screens to see if they can run their man into him, creating a screener. That's a whole nother thing. The terminology has to change. Nobody sets a screen in basketball. You're a stationary object and your teammate's supposed to make you into a screener, but nobody's ever explained that. And then he comes running out, and I remember one of them specifically, it was LeBron and J.R. Reed, and they both jumped out to take the shooter, and the inside person stepped in and got a dunk. That happened twice in a critical part of the third quarter, and the Warriors went on to dominate the game the rest of the way.
I'll be right back for more with Rick Barry. I think Steve Kerr and the Warriors over those dynastic runs really were kind of the poster team for ball movement and stuff. But you look back to this last season and you see what the Miami Heat did. I'm sure you were loving what they were doing, because they were doing all that stuff that you were talking about, forcing defenses to make decisions quickly.
Yeah, they did. Jimmy did a great job. I mean, you know, but passing and doing stuff. But they got a little bit carried away with a one-on-one, and that's when the Warriors got in trouble when they had KD, is they relied on him a little bit too much because they were just so much more effective when they were when they pass, move, and cut and do those things and play team basketball.
Well, that's kind of what – look, the Warriors had a lot of problems last year. They had the worst record in the league for a reason. Injuries obviously were a factor in that, but they lost a lot of players. The defense was never going to be as good as it was the years before because of everybody that they lost. But to me, the thing that I kept saying that needs dramatic improving was the ball movement. And it's not for a lack of trying. It's just that you have a lot of young players, Eric Paschal, Jordan Poole, who are talented, but – probably they're just not going to be to that level of experienced players like Iguodala and Livingston and Durant. And obviously when you're missing Steph and Clay and Draymond's in and out with injuries. I think that this offseason they need to develop that more than anything. The offense is going to come along just by getting Steph and Clay back. The defense needs real improvement too. And that's going to probably take added personnel, but the ball movement to me is what was glaringly missing. When you watch those old finals games, the ones we're talking about, the ball movement, the ping, ping, ping stuff, the quick reaction, the quick reads versus what it was last year, it's jarring. And would you – is that kind of what you're looking at too with what this team is missing going forward?
Yeah, well, you answered your own question.
Perfect.
That's exactly what the problem was. I mean, they didn't have the personnel and they didn't play great defense and their offense sucked. So what else you need to say?
Is that the hardest thing though to develop, is that ball movement stuff? Does that just come with years? Does that come with experience?
Well, it's not a matter of ball movement. Here's the problem. It's the choice of the athletes that you pick. To have success in any team sport, the three key elements of success: who do you draft? Who do you get in free agency? Who do you trade for? And what happens is that they get so hung up on athleticism a lot of times, and they don't pick guys who have the one thing that, if I'm scouting, the one thing I'm going to look at before I even bother to find out what kind of person he is and the other elements of his character: does he have a natural feel for the game? And if he doesn't, I don't want him. And those Warrior players you're talking about, they had a natural feel for the game. That's why they can make the passes and do the things. That's having a feel for the game of basketball. That's inherent. You can't teach a feel. You can teach somebody how to pass, but you can't teach somebody how to see.
And you can't measure it. Like, that doesn't come up in the vertical.
You can just look at it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I watch a guy for 5 minutes and tell you whether or not he can play.
That I agree with. What I meant was, like, that doesn't show up in the combine as far as what they're putting up on the weight bench or the vertical. Like, you need to watch, is what I'm saying. Like, you need to watch to see if they have the feel. There's no shortcut.
Yeah, you should be able to tell that in shit in 10 minutes at the most.
So who do you like in this draft then?
Nobody.
You don't like anybody in this draft.
There's nobody there that's going to take a team and bring them to a championship, as far as I'm concerned. Now, there may be a surprise that would come out and do something. There's somebody there say, oh, my God. Like when I saw Kevin Durant sitting with Jerry West down in Texas when he was playing a game in a tournament there. And I said, oh, we both looked at each other and said, oh, my God, is this kid going to be a hell of a player? I mean, or when you saw a video of LeBron, when he saw him, they televised his high school basketball game. I said, oh, my God, is this guy going to be a player? I mean, it's just jumps out at you when somebody's like that. Is there somebody out there in the draft this year that evokes that type of response from you?
No, but there are guys in this draft that
No. Don't give me no, but there are. No. You gave the but. You know, you gave the but. There's no sure. But. There is nobody that evokes that type of response from you. True or not?
No, that's true.
Okay, so there you go. So why do you want to keep a guy that you're hoping might develop in 2 or 3 years down the road when you have your three main guys that maybe got three really good years left in them? They got to win now. They got to get rid of that. Trade the guy away. Unless you really think that he's going to be somebody special, you trade him away and you bring somebody in that you know what you're going to get, and you bring in somebody that can actually help your team win a championship.
There's a lot of rumors of people who might be available in trades. Is there one that piques your interest?
Well, I've heard the crazy thing that Doc Rivers supposedly would get rid of Simmons. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. If you can give up a draft pick and maybe somebody else, you know, that, not Clay or Steph or Draymond, and you can get Ben Simmons, I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because here's a guy that can be one of your great players for a long time. He's a guy he's a Magic Johnson, a taller version of Magic Johnson, but has to learn how to shoot. But you can teach a guy how to shoot and get better at it. But he's got a great feel for the game. I saw him in college. My son played against him when he was in college. In Charleston, they came up and played against him. And so I said, wow, this kid's going to be one hell of a pro player, but he's got to learn how to shoot. I said, and he still hasn't learned how to shoot. He's gotten better, but he's not where he needs to be. But my God, I mean, you know, you can have him running the point and be running Cliff and Stay off all kinds of different people, running off, getting them open. I mean, my God, I'd take Simmons in a heartbeat. You know, but if not him, which might be difficult to pull off, but there's some other guys that are out there. I've heard the names of the Gasols and stuff of that nature and all, but why do you want to bring a guy in that's 35, 36 years old?
That's
if you're
going to
go for somebody and get some size, to me, the guy I'd go after would be Ibaka.
In free agency, yeah.
Yeah, Ibaka would be the guy I'd want to get, because Ibaka, you can spread the floor because he can bring the guy out because he can shoot threes, but he also can rebound and block some shots and give you an inside presence. And he can run the floor and play that style of basketball.
I think Ibaka would be perfect if they can get him. If he would agree to, you know, the Warriors won't be able to pay as much as Toronto or some of these teams with a ton of cap space. But if they're able to get Ibaka, that would be a home run for them.
Well, here's the thing. It'll tell you a little bit about him as to what's important to him. Yeah. Is being a champion more important than some extra money? He's got enough money to live 30 lifetimes or more, right?
Right.
So how important is that? Or do you want to be on a team that has a chance to win, playing in a great building with great fans and great teammates that you know will give you an opportunity to be a champion again? But he's had that. Okay. So, I mean, he got that, you know, so anyway.
That would also say a lot about a player too. Him and Marc Gasol, really, because they both won a championship in Toronto.
Right.
Is one enough? Or did you like the taste of it so much that you want to go back for more?
Yeah, only he can answer that question. You know? I mean, if he hadn't gotten one, I mean, I think it's simple. I mean, obviously Kevin Durant wanted it badly enough to do that and then got criticized for it, which I think was ridiculous. But yeah, so it comes down to that. But to me, that's if Simmons was available and do it, I would get Simmons. But if not, then Ibaka would be my number two guy.
That probably has to be part of the calculus, too, for the Warriors when they do use this number two pick, because the odds of a Ben Simmons getting traded on draft night are slim. If he's ever available, it'll probably happen at the deadline or something like that. Like maybe with the second pick, you pick the guy with the highest quote-unquote upside who has maybe the most trade value in a deal like that. I mean,
Because the Warriors have 3 years to do it. You know, I mean, you got to give these guys at least, what are they, they're 32, something. So they've got at least 3, maybe 4 years where they can be playing at, you know, that high level and hopefully staying healthy. And then, of course, the biggest factor is, you know, how close to being where he was before the injury is Clay going to be?
Right. That's a big question.
Yeah, a big question.
There's been a lot of talk about rust with these Warriors. It's going to be more than a calendar year since Clay Thompson has played in a real basketball game. Steph Curry obviously played toward the end of the year, but just only a little bit. It's going to be almost 300 days until they play another game if they get this thing started in late December, early January. How real is that idea of rust during an off season?
You have things you can put on rust to get rid of it, right? And they have a long season. If everything goes well and you have a regular long season, there's a lot of time to get rid of the rust. You know?
Yeah.
So that's not a big factor.
If you were a player, would you like – with this December 22nd start, there's rumors, or not rumors, but reports.
Is that when it is going to be now? I hadn't heard. I heard right before Christmas is the last I heard. I talked to somebody in one of the teams that I had to call about something, and he said they think they're going to do it right before Christmas. And that's because TV wants to have Christmas basketball. That's right.
And and if. Look, if I were a player, which I'm far from it, I would say that's great that the TV wants to play it, but I want my off season because it's been, if you're, you know, the Lakers or the Heat.
Don't give me that. I heard the same thing. Come on. You're getting paid millions of freaking dollars. Give me a break. You got to have more of an off season. Most of them have had a long off season. You're only talking about the ones that went into the playoffs and did stuff. I mean, so what? I mean, you want to play basketball. Come on. And you're getting paid that much money? You should have to play all year round. People work all year long and get 2 weeks vacation. Come on. Let's get serious here.
So, but did you value the – when you – how important is that offseason time, at least just for recovery and things like that?
You know what? When I hear this stuff coming, I can't relate to it.
Right.
These guys are so freaking spoiled. They don't have to go out and find a place to eat for $8 a day per diem and go to sleep at 2 a.m. You get up and catch a commercial flight at 6:30 or 7, and then, you know, go and play the next night. They're in a jet flying somewhere and getting a good night's sleep, staying in beautiful hotels, getting paid outrageous per diems and getting paid multi-millions of dollars and telling me how tough it is. Come on, this is insane. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous that I have to even listen to that stuff. I mean, just the average person probably feels the same way. They're busting their butts, working hard, working their 8 hours a day or more, how long it takes to commute and whatever thing, getting paid a pittance compared to what these guys get. And they get 2 weeks vacation. And they're worried about these guys not having more than, you know, a month and a half or more to have to go back to their job. Come on, please.
Well, speaking of working hard, you still work hard. We mentioned.
No, I don't work hard. That's not work. When you love what you do, it's not work. You know, people who hate what they do have to work for a living. That's why I tell all young kids, find something you have a love and a passion for. Learn as much as you can about it. Put a huge foundation of fundamentals down to build on. And if you're blessed with God-given talent and you're willing to put the effort forth to maximize that potential that you have, you'll never work for a living. Somebody's going to pay you to do what you love to do. That's not a job.
I think you and I then are very fortunate in doing that.
We are.
I love doing this. And
thank you. And same with me. I mean, I feel like I was stealing. And I didn't even make, you know, they forgot 3 zeros on my contract. Every time I got my check, it says, holy crap, somebody is actually paying me to do this. This is unbelievable.
I want to ask you about your podcast, Warriors 24. Why did you decide to start doing a podcast? A lot of players now are doing media extracurriculars in the media and stuff like that. You didn't need to do that. I'm curious.
I certainly didn't do it anything with money. I don't make any money. I just love talking basketball. And yeah. I got called by one of my former producers at KNBR, Cyrus, who's mm-hmm. a great young man, and I enjoy talking basketball. So it's kind of fun, you know, keep up on a game that's been such an integral part of my life and my family's life, and to be able to be out there and talk about it. You know, I'm happy to do that. And gives me a chance to express my feelings and thoughts about it. And because it's hard for me to watch games. I mean, I don't listen to the sound because they're watching a different game than I'm watching when I listen to some of these guys that are talking about what's happening on the court. I'm just wondering, what the hell are you watching? You know, it's like amazing to me.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the pandemic, and I don't want to get into anything crazy. I just want to know how you've been handling it, how you've been doing during the pandemic. And then a follow-up to that question would just be, what is it that you miss the most about pre-pandemic life that you can't wait to get back?
It hasn't been really anything. It's actually been kind of nice for me. I hadn't traveled anywhere near as much. I mean, it's cost me some money and stuff. Didn't get to coach the Big Three, which I missed. That was so much mm-hmm. fun seeing a lot of the guys and being a part of that, even though my team didn't play hadn't done very well, which is disappointing because I hate losing regardless of what it is. But it was a fun thing, and I got to know Ice Cube, who I think is just a hell of a person. I just really like him a lot as a person. And I'm actually trying to do some things with him and trying to help him out with his movement to help the inner city kids the inner city kids and families for that matter. But it hasn't really impacted me that much, you know, where mm-hmm. I've been. Not a big deal. I hate having to wear a damn mask doing stuff, but you know, I do what you have to do. And here's the biggest problem with stuff, okay, with the pandemic and stuff, is that, you know, everybody in life says, well, you got to play the hand that you're dealt, right? The problem is that most people learn how to play only one card game, you know, one major card game, and that's poker. And mm-hmm. but in poker, if you don't have a good hand, you fold. And so mm-hmm. a lot of people have folded, okay, which is sad. So you really needed to be a bridge player. Because if you know how to play bridge, you got to play the bad hands. And in fact, if you really want to be successful, you have to learn how to play the bad hands really well. And that would help you in life in general. So it's a kind of a good analogy. Be a bridge player, not a poker player, with this bullshit that we have to put up with that exists right now in our world.
Well, I know that you have somewhere to be in a few minutes, and I think that's as good of a place to end it as we could have found. So, Rick Barry, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, well, my pleasure, and I hope everybody gets back to some sense of normalcy here and remains healthy and do what you have to do, and go Warriors, hoping they get back to playing the kind of basketball that we'd love watching for those 5 years, and it'd be great to see that happen.
Thanks again to Rick Barry for stopping by. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, say nice things about the show. Thank you to Built Bar and Rock Auto for sponsoring the show. You can send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to me at wgoldberg@bayareanewsgroup.com. Thanks for listening, and stay safe.